In this episode, Ryan and I talk about what it's like to be drugged through the noise, off into the weeds, and beaten to death. And maybe, just maybe, it's time to build your own walled garden. And we had fun doing it. Thanks for listening. Welcome to the Banking with Life podcast. I'm your host, James Nethering.
And I'm your co-host, Ryan Griggs.
Now, listen, it's been a minute since him and I had the opportunity to sit down and chit-chat, and it was probably the last podcast that we did, which was at least somewhere maybe about a month ago.
Yeah, so here we are in March of 2024. There was just a release of part two, adopting new maps.
Yes.
There's a two-part one. So yeah, it's been a while since we've actually recorded. I think that one we did much earlier this year. Yeah. Hi.
Yeah, how have you been? Long time
to see. Someone's back from France. Nice trip abroad.
Yes, it was probably one of the best trips that we have taken. Yeah. My family and I love to travel.
The man doesn't ever travel. I mean, he works right down to the bone. And so to take some time to get away with his family is commendable and good. And I'm glad you went. And it sounded like you had a good time.
Thank you for saying that. We try to go once a year somewhere. But it's always affiliated with other stuff. This was completely nothing but
just family. For family, yeah.
Dropped into France, did everything that you'd want to do. And I think we were in there and out in 5 or 6 days. Went to Normandy, Bayeux, France, the first village town that was liberated in World War II and wasn't bombed to smithereens.
Oh, they're mixing it up on that one, huh?
Sorry. It's a beautiful town. I mean, we went by there because I'd been to France previously. And so I'm like, no, as we go to Normandy, you got to go to Normandy, mm-hmm. right? If you go to France, you got to go to Normandy, in my opinion, because, you know, history about. So we hired a guide, right? And I'm like, just go. I want to have lunch in Bayeux on the way to Normandy because my family had never been there. So mm-hmm. it was fabulous. Okay. But yeah, that was fabulous. And then, you know, we had done a trip a week earlier than that, too, that you participated in as a business trip. All right.
Yeah, so we just gave talks.
We've talked.
Yeah. Well, we each gave talks at that.
Oh, yeah. We gave talks. And then listen, we got a lot to talk about. I'm telling you today, it's been a minute since we have sat down, caught up. I mean, we talk on the phone regularly, but for the last hour and a half, you know, we've just been catching up. And I'm like, look, we got to do a podcast.
Well, I think, you know, while you were gone, I had a very interesting week. Now, to be frank about it with the listeners, I mean, almost kind of broke. I mean, it was, which my fault, ultimately, opportunities for improvement, let's say. You know, I think the fundamental base, like if you go to my website, it looks like a very nice life insurance agent's website.
And every picture have a tie?
Is that every, yeah. I think what yeah. I said was I've got more ties on in the website than I've worn in the last 3 years put together. Like, which is fine. I mean, it's professional. It looks nice and everything. But I think that what's happened is despite my best efforts, and maybe this is just part of the deal is how it works, is that I have allowed subconsciously, unintentionally.
Just the way it works. Parts of,
yeah. Look, we're all in the noise, right?
It's my gosh.
And it, as you say, hard to get it off you.
It is.
And part of what I have unintentionally absorbed is, I don't know, some sense of feeling an obligation. Like I need to look like the rest of the crowd, like in the sense of appearing to the marketplace like a professional life insurance agent, right? And even as I say that, someone might hear it and say, well, what's wrong with that? Like, isn't that a good thing? And it's like, yeah, that's fine. But that's not why I came to this business in the first place. It wasn't to go become a great life insurance. I didn't want to go place a bunch of life insurance policies.
I know, but don't just pick on the tie. I get it. Because you're, you know, an economist background, you know, you've spoken in lots of different conferences, lots of different platforms where everyone there wears a tie. So the tie is not only associated with the life insurance, I'm just the life insurance industry, but you have a professional background, right? So and this is just me speaking, you know, on the outside looking in, you have a level of professionalism that is, there's a standard there that's higher than a lot of life insurance guys. No disrespect.
Higher, lower, different.
Just but it different. Has nothing to do with, you wanting to be a life insurance agent.
Yeah, no.
But look, then the opposite end of that is let's go to a conference and watch everybody speak in shorts and flip-flops, which I wear as often as I possibly can, in a t-shirt, which I love t-shirts. I don't wear them unless I'm at the pool or whatever.
Sure.
So there is the opposite. You know, we can all be in shorts and flip-flops and a collarless shirt, a t-shirt that whatever talks about, you know, your favorite website or your company name or whatever. There's that too. So I would rather, you know, someone just show up at least, act like you have respect within the profession or industry that you're operating in. Okay.
Yes.
And I don't want to derail you. Okay.
No, that's a good.
And the young man wrote a fabulous Facebook post. If you're not friends with him, you're maybe he didn't make the cut. He didn't hit accept. I don't know. I'm just saying it's public. So go read the Facebook post because it's thorough. And oh my gosh, it's caused a few conversations in my life. Needed to be had, needed to be read, needed to be said. Okay.
Look, things are just developing and evolving, you know. Yeah. So a little background. Okay. Most people, life insurance business, 90% of them don't make it past 3 years. 90% of those don't make it past 5 years. You want the source, go Google it. It's out there. This is well known. Okay. So I'm entering year 7. Okay. So that's something. You've been doing this since, I don't know, the Fed came around. You've had plenty of it. Like, and then with Nelson, you know, his passing in 2019, here we are, 2024, March 23rd. We're almost on exactly the anniversary date, which I didn't even think of until this very moment. That's a trip. That would be 5 years ago.
Yep.
Woo. Yeah. Okay. Wow, that's interesting. So look, things are developing. And some of these experiences I had last week, it became clear that
I was gone. I wasn't here to help
talk me off a ledge. Yeah, no. Look, I'm not for everybody. We're not for everybody. Just because the letters I, B, and C might be found near each other doesn't mean we all do the same thing. And I think that as time goes on, I'm truly, deeply accepting that more and more. My default is, I don't know if it's not really people pleasing, but like I want to do a good job with people. And for some folks, they just approach, and in fact, the IBC or my office, my practice in particular, is just not a good fit. So I had a gentleman who, you know, has some years on me, as most do, some letters after the name, works in tech, startup. I mean, we're just building the red flags here, right? I mean, no offense to all the people with the letters after the name who are older who work in tech startups. I'm sure some of them, like everybody else, is a great candidate for IBC. This particular individual was not,
it
right?
Like it's a compounding effect.
Former, it gets worse. Right, okay, so prior experience as the head of a branch office of a well-known, if I said the name, you'd know it, well-known conventional financial services company sells the mutual funds and ETFs and all that. But look, you know, I call myself a Christian. I believe in redemption. I'm like, who am I to say no? I'll do 20 minutes with anybody. So we had that introductory call. We later had the next advisory call. And then
even Mark repented. Oh my gosh.
And he comes with, you know, there's a tactic, and some of you will have experienced this before, but there's a tactic from professional salespeople where they attempt to manipulate you into eliciting the answer they want you to say, right? And his approach to this was something like, you know, I'm just doing my best to understand this IBC stuff, and here I have this extensive financial experience, and I have a conventional advisor who also is an expert, has this extensive.
Also is an expert. I love it. He was so successful, he changed careers, huh?
4 times. Yeah. So it's gone so well But, you know, I just have these remaining questions, and I really just wanted to get them answered by somebody who I feel is an expert. You know, is that something you think you could help me with? Now, mind you, this that question and those words came, you know, an hour and a half into our total communication time, right?
But not at all at one time.
Not at all at one time,
okay,
but,
okay.
You know, it wasn't at the beginning.
Right.
Okay, so this... The
first 30 minutes, I'm sure, was all of his accolades and how smart he was and all of his history and experience. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Well, then, but the goal was to get me to say yes, you know? That's what it was.
Yeah.
Can't you just help me understand, you know? And noticing that, I responded, I think I've already done that. You know, so I'm not going to give you what you want. Like if it's coming for the validation seeking and it's the combat and it's, you know, I heard from the guy with the letters after the name who doesn't know what sequence of returns risk is, right? Because I'm sure all of the conventional financial advisors are pressed just like the unconventional non-traditional people, right? All the way down to the core of it, right? Oh, probably not. Okay. Well, so then I have that call and it just occurs. It's like a flash on the phone. It's like, oh, we're not a good fit. And then when what it really was when he specifically used that word extensive financial experience with that specific tone, and something just clicked. It's like, oh, we're done. So,
but I can't. But I just have a. Did he get around to the questions, or did you not?
No, I interrupted him.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can only imagine what they
might have been. It was something about, you know, I can get all of those returns. The high returns that do happen, he informed me.
Yeah,
in the stock market.
Absolutely,
you know, I'm giving up that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
okay. So then you had the epiphany. I really don't want to interrupt, but it's gold, man.
It just struck me. I'm like, oh, this is not. You know, it's a country of what 350 million people, and it turns out that one is not somebody I need to work with.
Woo,
and. For whatever reason.
Look at all the time you saved. You're only an hour and a half in.
Yeah. A lifetime, maybe, you know. And how many other kinds of interactions like that am I going to avoid by changing things? I don't know, but it's greater than zero. You know, so then I have other calls with people.
Wait. So you said that. What?
Yeah.
Let's okay. It occurred to you.
Oh, yes. And I said, I won't say his name.
John.
Make up one. John. John, we're actually not going to be a good fit. So I hope the information I've provided to this point has been helpful to you, and I wish you the best. Okay? And his response was, oh, wow, I'm surprised to hear that. And my response was, okay.
And I'm like, 'cause he's surprised because in his financial sales experience, he had to beat the fire out of somebody to get him to down to whatever he wanted them to answer, whatever that looked like.
Right.
And you're not willing to go through that. So he's shocked.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. The hostility and antagonism and bullying and all around nastiness that comes in the conventional financial conversation or debate or argument or whatever that is. Is so unappealing and it's like acidic to me. It just like boils through my skin. I just can't stand it. I can't stand it. And yeah, so people seem some, not all, certainly not all, but people with prior financial experience who have engaged with other financial advisors in the past might be accustomed, unfortunately, in a sort of Stockholm syndrome type fashion to this beating that occurs in the financial sales process. And that's supposed to be, I don't know, accepted, sophisticated.
Look, the consumer, in my experience, the client, the prospective client, the consumer, that's what they've experienced. You know, him, just because he's been licensed, you know, in some form or fashion and, you know, has extensive experience in the financial world, whatever that, look, that's so broad. Financial world is so broad. Okay. The general public, I mean, me included, in a sales arrangement, but specifically getting into the financial sales, okay, life insurance, investments, whether it's retirement planning, whether you're a certified financial planner or I love these, I'm dealing with a financial planner. What the hell does that mean exactly? Please, can you define that? But can you spell life insurance? I don't know. I'm just saying the experience that most of us go through in the financial world of a sales or purchasing process is why, is part of the reason, in my opinion, these younger people and even that the age is going up, that we could do things online. We don't have to deal with the individual who's like can't survive without, you know, manipulating someone into agreeing with them.
Right.
It's crazy. But that's almost the expectation of what the experience is, yeah, because that's the experience that they've had.
Right.
And then when they have another experience, an opposite experience, whether that relationship, you know, that experience was short lived, you know, an hour and a half, because he couldn't even wrap his mind around the fact that, yeah, no, we're not doing this. Right. But right, even if he,
wait, I'm not getting what I wanted.
What? You are telling me the epitome of the ideal client that you should want is not a good fit for you? Oh, it must have been a terrible blow to his ego. Yeah. However, if they push through that, whatever, if the relationship, you know, if he just said, oh, well, I don't know how the conversation could have went any different. Maybe from the very beginning he didn't do that. My point here is that is very common in the experience of the consumer that's trying to, you know, do better, purchase financial advice, products, solutions, what have you.
Yeah.
And then they're shocked whenever that is not the experience that they have with you.
Yes.
Wow, James, I just appreciate you being straightforward and no BS. I'm like, well, what did you expect? What you see is what you get. No. I mean, I know, James, even if I don't agree with you, you're going to give it to me straight. And even if you don't agree with me, you're going to give it, you know, it's like, what? Yeah. Nirvana. So
what a concept, you know, allowing for professional and technical disagreement.
Yep.
The fragility of so many online who want to hang themselves out as the expert, the finfluencer. I can't stand that name.
We do guru. Social media podcasts, but we do Pinterest, we do them all.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, the then that's really,
I'll even give you a history lesson while we're doing it.
And that's really what bothers me, is the manufacturing of that image of authority. Like that word, this is just so how it's done. You know, it's so, and this is what I'm saying. Like it's been a process, but even for
we're
me
still in it.
To become like more radicalized,
yeah.
You know, I have less than zero time for the validation seeking, the seeking after confirmation of non sequitur type arguments. Oh, I've got, look, how many times are we going to do it, guys? How many times do people need to be told? Nelson said it a long time ago. Okay. Long, long time ago. I don't know how much. Okay. There's a spot for grace and patience and all that. I get it. But look, we got a limited time to walk around on this planet. So I don't know how much time we have to consider the fact that citing a historical averaged annual rate of return on a some index has nothing at all to do with what may or may not happen in that. It is literally irrelevant. I had a client yesterday who told me that he was trying to find a banking partner. So he went and found this bank and they had been around for 125 years. 18 months after he signs up, they get bought out.
Oh, what?
Yeah. You know, so it's like, I get it. We're surrounded in it. But within insurance in particular, within the marketing and within IBC and in the banking adjacent spaces, you know, I have just lost the ability to endure that objection of, but Raymond James or the whatever advisor, TD Ameritrade or Charles Schwab or Vanguard or you name it, what the letters are after the name, Masters or PhD or COO or CEO or PH or JD
CFP, or CFA, yeah, you, CLU,
look, CHFC. Put the whole alphabet out there.
Well, how much are you paying for the use of all those trademarks? I know you passed his test. I get it.
Yeah, not enough. Add a zero. I mean, the look, all of that.
It was a rigorous test, too.
And all of that manufactured marketing and sales dogma, which is what all those letters after the name are, has nothing to do with the underlying merits of the proposal, which is that you can, in fact, go get the kind that the reference to the historical average rate of return somewhere else is going to meaningfully predict what you yourself will experience over the course of your lifetime. That is so wrong, and I'm over it. I'm just over it.
That's clearly disclosed in all those disclosures, right?
Yeah, which nobody reads, right? But we're going to go beat up the life insurance guy with all the objections.
Because you get paid a commission and you're a commission hound.
Yeah. So
and right. Look, it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I don't know how many times I've given this answer. Because people will ask me.
I haven't laughed this much in a damn long time thinking.
Okay, I got more coming. I get people ask me, well, I've been contributing to my tax qualified plan. You know, what should I do? It's like, guys, I do not have the government permission slip to give investment advice. I don't have it. I don't want it. I don't seek it. I won't seek it. I'm not going to seek it. I don't have any holdings in the cartelized public casino that you call a stock market. I'm not interested. I have no desire. The idea that there's going to be a 10% barrier between me and my capital until I'm 30 years older is beyond the pale. What are we talking about? And then as a professional,
it's actually 40 for you, sir.
Great.
And then
a professional with some designations is going to go throw allegedly like laundered marketing material that they put some economic bleach in so you can get some of the vocabulary, no, right?
We call it propaganda.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm over it. I'm over it. And then what about de-dollarization? What happens when the economy collapses? It's like,
how long have you been talking about? How long have you been answering those questions? They're legitimate questions if you have no idea, or, you know, they can be legitimate questions if you, it's the first time you've considered, you know, market collapse and, you know, currency collapses, yeah, and changes, and I get it. But when you dive into it for, you know, 4 or 5 years and you still want the economist, right, the financial professional to address that one more time, how does that affect life insurance?
Yeah. So
how's it going to affect every other asset that you own? I mean, okay, I don't even want to get you triggered. I just want to continue laughing. This is so... I needed it.
Cathartic? Good. Yeah, this is really just for us. Y'all are just welcome to be here at the same time. I get that people have the legitimate question. And I don't expect... And I know people think I'm arrogant. It's not a surprise. People have been telling me that since I was 5 years old. So it's not anything new.
It's okay? Embedded, baby.
And it's yet another thing that I'll just embrace.
I can just see your mama. I love her. The teacher telling your mama, Kim, your six-year-old son is arrogant. Why do you say that? Because he's challenging my knowledge on the subject that I'm teaching. Yep. Okay, all right.
But that's what it is. Yeah.
Yes.
So, fine. You want to believe that, think that? I'm so far past over
His
it.
Mother is an educator as well.
I'm yes. Just school okay. teacher, been for a long time. We're all educators. We're teachers. That's why I wanted to be a teacher. And so, you know, I understand that people have genuine questions. I don't expect everybody to know everything that we talked about. I really don't. But you also need to understand where I'm coming from. Okay. And it's not within my imperfect human condition to respond like Mother Teresa on the 105th time that I'm responding to the same question.
But it was my first time to ask a question, right?
I get it. I know. And so what's going to have to happen?
Which I don't really believe that as applied to your experience with the financial know-it-all guy.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And so what's going to have to happen in those situations for this to work out is the client or the individual working with me needs to be of the sort where this kind of style, the career, whatever you want to call it, the charisma, passion, whatever, that's going to have to be okay with you, because and we'll address the merits of the objections.
Well, I think that the people that reach out to you, they and I think that they are okay with that. They love your passion.
They like,
I know,
yes.
They love my passion. And they tell me over and over. And they love it when you get triggered, which is just another way of saying we love it when you get passion and go off into a topic.
Yeah. So, and my own mental hang up has been, you know, you have a tendency to fly off the handle, Greg, so chill out. It's like, but you're exactly right. When I let go of the outcome, which is really what's going on here.
There you go.
Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really what's going on here. And when I just and flow with people in conversation like this, this is exactly, you see what you get. Yeah, it goes really, really well. Yeah.
If you don't care, I don't care. You know what I mean? So if you're not passionate, you know, you don't care enough to be passionate, whatever you do, whomever you are, if you don't care, I don't care.
Right.
You know, by God, I want to work with somebody who cares.
Yeah. And this, the freaking Happy Gilmore, everything's puppies and fairy dust and ooh, let's do that too, and oh, collaboration and all this fake manufactured marketing tactics.
Oh, they're like the humble brag. This is new for me, but
yeah,
the humble brag. Oh my gosh,
I'm so far over it, you know. And I know, you know, it's all marketing. We're all supposed to be in this together and everything.
Griggs,
and,
don't you know that's what you do with this podcast? It's co-host Bank with Life. That's right. Your marketing program. You don't act like you don't market.
Yeah. And here's why I get upset about it, right? Because I have direct experience of the results of that sort of half-assed, glitzy, glamorized marketing practice, which, by the way, everybody hates. The reason you know what I mean when I say the word clickbait is because everybody already knows that they hate that turn and burn high volume marketing style of business, right? We're not selling sneakers here. This isn't, you know, turn and burn consumer products, you know, buy some pins off of Alibaba type thing. Turn and burn, you know, high volume, get the numbers up.
I've seen some stuff that the quality is about like that.
Yeah, this is about
the financial world.
And I know that to some people too, I say, oh, this is about a relationship and service. And you're like, oh, you're just trying to, you know, overemphasize the value so that we go to you instead of one of your cheaper competitors. Trust me, I know the argument, right? I get it.
Oh, I haven't heard that one.
And but fair enough. If one thinks that there is no need for high touch, well documented service after the point of sale of a life insurance policy built for the IBC, we are absolutely not a good fit. Because you think that life insurance companies have stellar customer service departments and you're just going to swiftly manage that contract without issue for the rest of your life? That is a myth. You are asleep, right? That is a dream that you can only believe if you are sleeping. It is not how the world works. Call your cell phone company. How's that customer service experience? Not great. Look, I'm not here to apologize for companies. I've never said publicly a life insurance company name other than when they put themselves out there, like when we talked about that memo from that one company. But I don't blast companies. This is the industry. The service is bad, period. And you can talk about getting a faster. This is real common. Had this fun experience this week, right? Agents, not going to say the names, of course, but... this is very common, nothing to do with these guys in particular, with this office in particular, happens with a lot of different offices. You know, I have guys from the home office, executives at home offices of life insurance companies calling me to complain about other people, other agents sending their business to other companies because the other companies can get through underwriting a week or two faster.
Wait, this is this week, not last week.
That was just two days ago.
Back to back.
Yeah. Ew. Yeah. And this is another thing. I'm like, people have no idea how the life insurance business works. They have no idea how the commissions work, what goes on behind the scenes.
They're just high. You know, that's all. The agent, buy all that money.
Yeah. And look, I come into this wanting to, naive. I came in naive. So the way I have been feeling, is sort of this revelation of being just constantly gaslit. You know, this the illusion that the people who have the letters after their name actually know what they're doing. I mean, look, the burden's on them to show it, man. If the next time someone talks to me about a tax-qualified plan, I'm like, the first question will be, great, what was your advisor's response when you brought up sequence of returns risk? Yeah. and then we'll wait and we'll enjoy the silence. Because the imbalance, right, the hostility directed at the new proposal, IBC, and then the people with the past financial experience and all their preconceived misconceptions want to come and find some way that they can be correct so that they can disregard that new proposal. And of course, and I don't know, I'm not saying anything special about me, but maybe I'm making a very strong case. And so maybe they want to get the guy who's making it strongly enough to turn. Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Really?
It's wow. not going to happen. And
I would give like 20 seconds of time to a conversation with that objective.
Yeah.
Get me to turn.
It's wore me out. It's wore me out. And the people who deserve the time and attention, who want to truly implement the infinite banking concept.
That's the real cost right there.
That's
the real cost.
Yeah.
It's like, how many times do you want to answer the same question from somebody that is the answer has been given, excuse me, in multiple ways, maybe with even a couple of different anecdotal responses. You know, it's like, how many times can I answer this question and how many different ways can I answer the same question? And you want to ask me that question again when you didn't read, you didn't watch, you're not willing to do, you don't even care enough to read a 92-page book. You're going to tell me a Wall Street financial guru can't read a 92-page book and just like, just can't wrap my mind around, Ryan, why I would like forego these great big returns that can be made. How does a loan repayment with my policy compared to the loan repayment what Nelson illustrated in Becoming Your Own Banker, equipment financing, or whatever. It's
yeah.
just over and over and over. Why should I? I don't want to go off. I'm just saying that if they don't care enough to read or try to understand, make an attempt to understand, it is okay to be wrong. It is okay to be ignorant. It's not okay to remain ignorant, and it's not okay to continue to make the same mistakes, in my opinion,
mm-hmm.
right? It's just you're not making an effort to do better, which I believe that's the way we're created, is to do better. And maybe you don't believe that, and it's okay. You write a book. Write an article. How many of them are going to read it? You know, and then you put it out, whatever it is, the material that was produced, and you get an influencer. Yeah, I don't need any designations behind my name. James, Ryan, you're exactly right. It's like, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. I'm just, you know, a 19-year-old guy or girl or 57. It doesn't even matter gender or age. You know, I'm going to pay a bunch of money to run a camera and talk about things I know nothing about. And I don't care. We're talking about the finfluencer in the financial industry, right? I don't care what industry it is. You know, you can get on and talk about farming equipment for all I care, or automobiles or whatever, being a mechanic or whatever. How about gold or silver or even economics? Listen to them for about 30 seconds, and whenever, I don't want to be so harsh. Some people are very good, right? But I'm talking specifically about the people who have the ability, they look good, they sound confident on whatever social media platform they're on. And if you didn't know anything about what they were talking about, I'm all in. But if you know a modicum of what they're speaking about, it's like, oh my God, they're so wrong on so many levels, and they have no idea. They don't even know.
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
I think of these, the gurus that sell, I won't say the name of the program, but they charge a few $1,000s for it, and then subscription after that. To teach you how to go leverage everything in sight to go buy the cash flowing real estate, right? On the eve of, you know, a yield curve reversion. I mean, the carnage that will come as a result of all the horrible advice.
Is this around the infinite banking footprint?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, yeah. Yep. Oh, there's a lot of things around the infinite banking footprint. And it's, you know what? I need to do a disclaimer. That I've done a lot of videos with clients and then outside professionals, whether they're in the financial industry or whatever. I do not endorse any activity of any other financial professional. Like, I love Ryan Griggs. he's a little different. I endorse what he does, all right, because I know what he does. Outside of that, it's like, no, hard hell no.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's, I can spell IBC. I have a life insurance license. Now, I might be a, you know, a 30-year whatever physician or a podiatrist or whatever other profession that I'm coming from, but now I've got a license, so I'm all in here, and let me show you how to do this, this, and that, and you wind up leveraging all that. So, what a beautiful presentation. An appreciating cash flowing asset with you controlling the leverage. Yeah, no question. I don't know how many presentations I've given on that over the years. And most of those are 15 and 20 years old that need to be updated.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, I digress.
Yeah, when I talk with, on the rare occasion, not rare enough, maybe occasion I have to talk with other agents, this is part of it too. It's the, you know, you'd think that they'd like to just stay home and have you mail them a check. You know, maybe the universal basic income, maybe the really the core group they need to go after is the life insurance agents, because they just really like to get paid without having to do very much.
Wait, can we add digital creators in there, influencers?
Oh, yes. That? Let's not be exclusive. We need to be inclusive.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's, you know,
are you picking on the insurance guy.
True. that's part of it too, you know, the individuals who, well, I'd like to, you know, I'd like to get a license so that, you know, I can handle my family's policies and, you know, collect that commission. You know, can you help me do that?
I love that. Here, I've got a policy. I've referred a couple of people, and, you know, now it's like, and they become clients of yours, whomever you are. And then it's like, oh, well, that's so dang easy. Let me get a license, and then, oh my gosh, you ran out of friends and family. Then what? I've been telling, and I mentor agents, and my encouragement is in the very beginning, refer someone, right, to whomever you have a relationship within the life insurance and infinite banking footprint, whatever. Refer them from ground zero. They've never even heard of the concept, never read Nelson's book, Becoming Your Own Banker, you know. Start with them right there. Refer them to the book. Help work through the book with them. Walk through the book with them. Get them to the point, this unsuspecting American public individual, and get them to the point where they're paying the same premium that you're paying. Right? Big old life insurance premium. Comparatively, right? It's like $6,000, you're capped, $7,000 to the Roth IRA, $18,000, $24,000 capped on other qualified. Get them to the point where they're willing to pay $25,000, $30,000, whatever the number is, a large life insurance premium. Do that three or four times, and then whomever you're referring these people to so successfully are going to tell you, it's like, oh my gosh, you're made for this. Like, you're a magnet for people. You need to go get a license. But what do I know?
What a concept. To just attract that kind of mentorship arrangement. Yeah. You know, in fact, this does happen, by the way. People are like, oh, does that really happen? Yes, it does. In fact, it happened to me this week. I tell you, these last 2 weeks have been wild. So Luke, got to give props to Luke, real name Luke out there. Luke has a friend, and that friend contacted me. And so I'm just asking, you know, what was the background? How'd you get in touch? Well, come to find out, this individual's friend, Luke, had done IBC. He's going to church with this other guy. And it just randomly came up in conversation. You know, it's becoming your own banker stuff. And so the individual I was speaking with asked his friend Luke, you know, what should I do here? And Luke said, well, I've got my policies that I got from my guy, but if I could go do it all over again, I would have gone to Ryan first. And
oh my gosh.
Yeah. And then the friend goes, oh, okay. And then, but Luke tells him, but you're going to need to read the book. And so the friend says, okay, well, can I borrow yours? No. And Luke tells him, no, you need to go buy it. The guy's telling me this on the phone. I'm like, you're kidding. Like, good. So, hey, good job. I don't even know if this engagement with this person whose name I can't even remember right now is going to work out or not. Doesn't matter. That is exactly it. Man, you do people no favors. None. When you make it artificially easy for them. And I talk about this with referrals. You know, I have agents who's like, because one of the answers is, well, after I wear out the friends and family, who's next? Oh, well, they're going to refer people to me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, okay. So I have had this conversation with people. You know, people seem to think that there's this idea out there that referrals for financial salespeople is like a legitimate, substantial, ongoing form.
Well, it would be. It could be if you're in the 1950s model of, you know, the abusive relationship of financial purchasing and sales or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be. Just someone else got beat up in the ring until, you know, somebody taps out.
Exactly. If things were different, they'd be different, but they're not.
Right.
Right. And so, referral. And look, I had a guy, Peter, longtime client, great guy, really enjoyed. And I loved how exactly he contacted me. He said, you know, it had been a minute since we talked. I have a friend who's really interested, but I don't know the right way to get them in touch with you. Right. I know you've said things like this, what I'm about to say before. I really appreciated that. Right. Because what often happens is the individual who wants to refer other people is extremely passionate and has done a lot of work on their own, unprompted by themselves, just because they're curious and interested and passionate. And then because they have come to understand what IBC Style Whole Life is and what it can do for them and their family, they want it for other people they love too.
That's true.
So I get that. Right. However, oftentimes the person you love is not as excited, curious, and passionate as you are about this IBC and whole life.
They're not even willing to do what the friend did. See, they're not willing to do on their own reading, deep diving, questioning their own narrative and their own perspective. They're not willing to pay the price or do what they did to get to that point where it's like, this makes sense to me because of this.
Right.
So, yeah, I can't want it for you. I can refer you all day long, but you need to do at least what I've done or somewhere along that path. Maybe you might have to read three books. I may only need to read one. Whatever.
And let me add this little bit in here. You do not need your people to validate what you are doing.
Oh, that's true.
So if there's any part of that, which I want my people to do this too, if any part of that is because really you need them to agree with what you've been doing in starting IBC, that is not the case, right? IBC stands on its own. The merits are there. If you go through a thorough advisory process, transparent, open-ended, you participate, you do what you need to do, you have a competent agent who does what he needs to do or she needs to do, then chances are what you've ended up with was good for you then. It's probably still good for you now. And swimming around in the noise, that's just what that is. And like James has said in the past, you can do as much of that as you want. You know,
another thing that, speaking of what not to do or what's not needed, is you don't need to be a life insurance expert to share it with people. Now, if you're challenging them on their narrative and their thinking, of course, they're going to challenge you back. It's like, I'm going to question everything about you. My character, your character, you know, their intelligence and all of that, which it's being put on the defensive. It gets to the point where I hear over and over and over, yeah, I've shared it with my friends, my family, my business partners or whatever. But today, you know, I mean, they have PhDs. One of them's an economist or one's a financial guy, whatever. They're very successful. But they just won't get it, so I'm not going to continue sharing with them, but I will lend them money.
Hey, there you go.
Oh, my gosh. It's like, yeah, I don't get it, but I don't have enough liquidity to go take advantage of whatever this area is and I'm an expert in. You know, so my point is you don't need to be a life insurance expert, and you don't – my encouragement would be don't let someone put you on the defensive, right? They haven't read what you've read. They haven't watched what you've watched. They haven't paid the premium that you've paid. They haven't made the loan repayment. They haven't done all of these things, right? So don't let them put you on the defensive and make you feel bad for the greatest decisions, in my opinion, that you probably made.
And even further, your pushing it on them is likely to just turn them off more. It just will make it more difficult. You know, you can't. And this goes back to the idea of influence in general, right? There, Nelson has that, is it Herbert Spencer quote in the book, that a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still?
That's Ben Franklin. But there's a principle above all principles that cannot fail to keep man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation.
That too, right? It's the same. Herbert Spencer. That's the Herbert Spencer one. Yeah. Thank you. It's the same idea. It's like influence, and they call it influencers. Guys, there is no such thing as influence. There is no such thing as somebody causing you to do or act differently. There is you choosing to mold your thought and behavior patterns on somebody else's, right? Human beings are mimetic, I get it. But that is not you passively receiving instruction from some external influencing source. No, no, it started with you granting that source the authority, the permission to inform your pattern of thought and behavior. So there is no influencing. If there's a market demand for this finfluence stuff, that just means there's a demand for indulging short-term sighted thinking. There's a demand for substituting financial entertainment for legitimate financial advisory and strategy conversations. There's a demand for this artificial, manufactured, just bedazzled. We want to find the higher number bigger sooner. We believe that's better. The epistemology in this country has changed. We're Wall Street won. Okay. By and large, we've been convinced financial analysis is telling the difference between two numbers. One's bigger, one's smaller. I know people like joke about that. Ha ha. And then they may give me a hard time when they like you find a successful like investment activity or something. I get it. But I'm going to keep pressing on it because that's what it is. The continual compression, the extinction, just wringing it out like a wet towel, just all of the nuance and context and vibrancy, the full image that is stripped out, right? And in its place, higher number, bigger, sooner. And it's so pervasive. And even people who don't or haven't spent much time thinking about finance, it's again, it's part of this, the effect of the noise. We're in it. The fish are the last to notice the water. We unintentionally imbibe some of it. And then we find ourselves habitually repeating these phrases and words that are not really ours, right? That somebody else came up with. Buy term and invest the difference. Oh, but the average annual historical rate of return in the S&P 500 is 12%. That's what so-and-so said, right?
Your life insurance company keeps your cash value when you die.
Whole life is the worst place to put money. Keep it, yeah. All these things. These are...
Pay interest to borrow your own money.
Yeah. These are misconceptions that are being passed around.
It gives me the... I already have a position, you know, preconceived. Life insurance is bad. I bought into the narrative that the market or whatever... you know, I'm doing is the greatest thing ever. And so these cliches that cannot die, won't die, can't die, that are everlasting. I mean, life insurance is a bad place to put money. You know, life insurance keeps your cash value when you die. You got to pay interest to borrow your own money. That gives me just an easy deflective defense that I can just move away from you, shut you down quickly, and so I can continue doing what I'm doing. Everybody knows that. Everybody knows. Ryan, the whole financial world, the CFP, the retirement planner, the financial planner, everyone knows, but you. That life insurance, especially the high cash value, you know how much commission the insurance guy's making? Are you kidding me? If it's not a 90-10, it's because they're getting paid commissions. If it's not some mutilated structure, it's because they have your best interest at the small point. They're taking care of themselves first. I mean, everybody knows but you, Ryan.
Right.
Everybody.
And you know, I have gotten to the point where I am now at peace with that idea. Yeah. Like, great. I'm even willing to believe that that's the truth. I don't think it is, but you know, even if it were, fine.
You know, I appreciate you saying that because I'm you know, and let me say, I've said it many times, I've had gray hair since I was in high school. Now it's turned white, okay? And I have spent my whole career trying to do better, find the truth, you know, and then promote the truth, support the truth, point to the truth, point to the pitfalls. And, you know, the commitments I've made through my life, I think I've there's no question I've made legitimate efforts to fulfill them. And I'm just coming into a place in my life that I'm not, just because you have a question, I'm not obligated to the answer. But James, you have a Q&A. Yeah, and I'll choose to answer the questions I wish to, okay? I'm not, you know, like for Nelson Nash, example, I had a relationship with an individual, a man, 16 years, you know, he's gone in 2019 since then. And my commitment to him was, I'll do my part, right? So, you know, I'm just saying that this point in my life, which I'm going to be just like him, is working harder than most 40-year-old people when I met him, and I didn't meet him until he was age 71 or 72, right? And he worked all the way up to the day he graduated, age 88. So I want to be just like him and just like his mentor who graduated the night before he was going to deliver a speech, working, right? So I'm going to be, that's my pattern, right?
There you go.
However, I am not obligated to convince the world of anything.
No.
Nothing.
There have been proposals out there in the world about how what the goal should be is to convince or persuade or get a certain amount of people to buy policies. And I think that is just completely, I don't agree with that either. I think it's about what I got from you, and then my understanding that you got from Nelson, but you can correct me, is the next one.
That's it.
Yeah. The next one kind of goes in line with another.
Not top down thinking. We got to paint everybody a particular color, put a star on every sneech so you can have a star belly sneech.
And to be like the rest. Just the one.
The one. Just the one. Just the Nelson one. Used to say, I know I said it before, we've talked about it, you know, you like if you go to an event, you know, whether it's a financial event, you know, industry event, whatever, that the event is almost put on to entertain, right? Whatever it is. And then a lot of the people come to be entertained. Right? And so some are entertained and happily and they return, and then some are not, whatever. But that was not the idea that Nelson had and that he had gotten from his mentor, Leonard E. Reed. You know, it was to convey an idea, right, to teach, really, to share, to teach, or to get someone to consider, right? Really, it really boils down to the thinking, that's all it was. Getting someone to consider the way they think.
His idea.
Yeah.
This idea.
Yeah. He said that after the event, after the talk, he said there's always the talk after the talk. Mm. Right? That's the most important talk of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Because there's always at least the one that wants to know the truth, that wants to be mentored, looking for a mentor, is a mentee, what have you. You know, so that relationship, genuine, they didn't come to be entertained. You know, they came to hear, and then they heard.
Yeah. I had this conversation with somebody's, you know, client. Like you were saying, you don't expect you to be a master of life insurance. And so let's say that, you know, you hit your head on something and for whatever reason you wanted to do IBC with somebody other than James or me, right? And so not thinking clearly, but fine. Let's say you go do that. Like, how might you navigate that, right? Like, do you have to become an expert in life insurance in order to evaluate the agent? And my response to this particular individual was, no. All you got to do is pay just a little bit of attention to the form of their arguments. Right? How are those? It doesn't matter what positions they're taking yet. All that matters at the first pass is how are they approaching it? For instance, are they saying, look at this nice wall of numbers here and look how big that one is? Are they doing something like that? Or are they saying, hey, on page 38 of Becoming Your Own Banker, Nelson Nash said this, and so today we do this. Right? You see the difference in form?
Oh my gosh.
Right? You don't have to agree or disagree with any claim within either of those two approaches. All I'm saying is recognize that there is a different approach. So look, if you want to do what Nelson Nash taught, my encouragement would be to find somebody who at least, even if they're wrong, who at least couches what they propose to you in terms of what Nelson wrote. Like, if that isn't the form of the argument, well, then what are we doing? We're not even in the ballpark. We're doing something else. I don't know what else it is we're doing. There's a lot of different things one can do. It's not this.
I got some ideas.
Right. It's not over here. It's not what Nelson Nash taught. So if you read this book, Becoming Your Own Banker, and you're like, oh, wow, I want to do what this man taught, you might go try to find somebody who is attempting to explain to you what they do and its relationship to what Nelson Nash taught. And if they're not doing that, well, then ignore them. That cuts out 95% of the possibilities.
Wow.
Right? All of the social media, the TikTok influencey stuff, if you don't see tie backs to the source, that's all this is, right? Is the source in what it is they're talking about?
Well, they say his name. They can say Nelson Nash.
There you go. Okay.
They can say infinite banking concept or infinite banking or whatever.
So that can be a good first pass. Are they using the right words? Okay, maybe they are. Next, are they using them correctly?
What?
Right? Does it making sense? Does it seem like they want you to take their word for it? Is there any attempt to explain why they might propose one thing or another? Is there any of them insisting that you just do something because they've told you? Right? These are, again, it doesn't particularly matter what it is they want you to believe or do or think or say. It just matters that are they insisting that they take their word for it? Right? This, again, paying attention to the form of the argument. And that'll get you a long way. And look, it's real simple. Just go back to the source. Just go back to the source. That's all. Trust your own judgment.
What?
Trust your own judgment. If you don't feel good, then you don't feel good. I mean, my goodness, man, you feel that way for a reason. You know, if the interaction,
I'm self abusive though. I'm like, I gotta keep going back to feel bad because it's about me. Something's wrong with me.
Yeah, look. Nothing's wrong with you. The odds are it's something wrong with the financial industry. There's plenty of options to choose from. Oh, so give yourself a little bit of grace too.
Amen.
Right?
Yep.
And start from the source.
Maybe if it is obvious, it is obvious. Maybe it's so simple. You mean to tell me 92 pages of financial guru or whomever? I remember one time years ago, a girl, she was an educator, changed careers to become an agent and within an agency that was trying to embrace infinite banking. And we did little forums, you know, come and present to each other and, you know, philosophize and all that. And at the podium, she said, I think she had a master's, right? And she said, I was insulted at the simplicity of this book. I was insulted at the simplicity of this book. Uneducated, unprofessional, blah, blah, blah. And I was insulted, right? I don't have a master's, I don't have a bachelor's, and I don't have a CFP because I don't have a bachelor's, and I'm not going to go get one, okay? Okay. And at one time, you know, that used to weigh on me, like, oh, you don't have these designations, or I've given up a lot of designations. My whole point here is, she's saying, this is so simple, right? And it's like, oh my gosh, you're jumping over. It is okay to read a 92-page book and embrace the simplicity. Simplicity is a virtue,
right?
Brevity is a virtue. And it doesn't need to be interpreted, okay? Somebody with a master's or bachelor's or doctorate, they don't need to enter CFP, CHFC, CLU, whatever designations they may or may not have. You don't need an interpreter. If you speak and read English, it's written in English and other languages as well. I believe it's in Mandarin Chinese and Japanese. I'm not sure. I'm just saying, you don't need an interpreter.
They have property rights over there? No, I'm kidding.
Well, more so than the U.S. What are you talking about? Which country were we talking about? Okay. So, and it's okay to read it more than once. I'm just saying, you don't need an interpreter. You're smarter than they're telling you are, and you know this. Shocking. We went a little long, but we were having fun and hope you enjoyed listening. We're going to pick it up from here next time.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.